Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Paraskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Okay, everybody, welcome back to The Fighting Priests. My name is Father Ted Paraskevopoulos. I'm here with my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg, up in Calgary. Father, how's it going?
Good. Really busy.
Really busy?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's the summer, and we were just talking, actually, about this recently, that when priests decide to go on vacation, they, for some reason, everybody wakes up and remembers that they're Orthodox. And they'll like to call and say, oh, I need a house blessing. I need this. I need that. It's like, where were you like all year? Are you just right 2 weeks before I go on vacation? So you're going on vacation too, right? In July, Father?
Yeah, I got July off.
Nice. So we were talking about that last episode. You're going to go to the mountains a bit?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Manitoba for a bit. And then I'll be back in Alberta, but not available.
Nice. Me too.
Yeah, we're going to go to the Kootenay Mountains, like to Kootenay National Park, which is in BC, the western side of the Rockies, right? I've been there before. It's beautiful. There's no cell service there. There's no Wi-Fi. And then with my nephews, they never been to the mountains yet. And then after that, we'll take the youngest nephew, Luke, is the hindrance in my, what I would really like to do, because he can't camp as long. Not my daughter, the 10-month-old, my little nephew, 6. I asked my sister, I'm like, how long can this kid camp for continuously? She's like, oh, not too long. So we're going to come back. We'll probably take him to the zoo, the Calgary Zoo and stuff. And then we'll go, I'm going to take him to Waterton National Park, where I recently took my daughter for her first camping trip. So
nice. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's going to be good. And I'm going to be sitting on a beach in Greece. So, and I'm hoping to turn off the cell phone and not talk to anybody.
Yeah.
But until then, today we have a very special guest. It's been a long time coming, actually. We've been trying to schedule it for a while. A friend of mine, actually, from my dojo here, from Rev MMA, Mr. Panos Christou, who is a 3-stripe purple belt. He trained originally at Toronto BJJ, where you were, Father Thomas. And then I think you were at Riverdale Martial Arts, yes, near Danforth, which is also an affiliate of Jiu-Jitsu for Life team. And now you're, to my benefit, he is another nice big guy, not as big as me, but he's a big jiu-jitsu, BJJ, big jiu-jitsu practitioner. And he's over at Rev, and we have good times rolling. And his background is Greek, and we're going to let him talk a little bit more about himself. But we welcome him to the podcast here on The Flame Priest. Welcome, Panos.
Thank you, Father Ted and Father Sandberg. It's a huge honor to be on this podcast. I've had the pleasure to listen to several of your other podcasts, and they were very interesting because I've never heard of this concept before, and I really wanted to take part in this, and let's get a productive podcast.
All right, nice. Yeah, I remember when I met you, it was like you were visiting the first time.
That's right.
Yeah, you're just like one of the classes. This is like around Christmas time, right? You came by? Was it before Christmas or after Christmas?
I believe it was a month or so after.
Okay, so like January, right? Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, you came by. And then, like, of course, Joel, the owner of the club, he's like, oh, look, it's a Greek guy. Go talk to him. I'm like, thanks. That's what I do. I have to try to recruit all the Greek people who show up at the dojo, right? So we started talking, and he found out I was a priest. And then I found out that he knew you, Father Thomas, although I don't think you guys ever met at Toronto BJJ, right?
No, just on the internet, I guess, we know each other.
Yeah, you guys.
I think right before the pandemic, like, I think you wanted me to bless your house when I was
in the prison. Yes, you remember.
Father Ted, remember I asked you, I was like, how do I bless someone's house or something? I don't know if you remember.
Because you were newly ordained, right?
Yeah, and you were like, just go, and I didn't know the chance. Like, I just, for the listeners, I just literally came from someone's house that I blessed. And so that's why it's funny to me in my head when I was driving. I was like, because you don't know the hymns, how to chant them. You don't, right? You don't know. You learn as much as you can in seminary, but it's not always the most, sometimes it's more academic than practical.
Sure.
Which also can be good, but then you learn by doing. So, yeah. But I think you blessed his house, right?
I did. Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Good job for you.
Well, then the pandemic happened too, so whatever, but
yeah.
So you know the way it is, like you have a list of things you want to do, even when you're not a full-time priest, right? And then things get buried under other things, right?
Yeah, that's the way it is. So, Panos, I'll ask you then, like, give us a little bit of background, you know, as we usually do with our guests, give us a little bit about, where you grew up, family life, things like that, before we get into your jiu-jitsu journey.
Okay, so as you know, my name is Paniotis Christou. I don't go with Paniotis. It's being the John Smith name from the old country, it doesn't really work here in Canada. So for the first so many years of my life, I went with Peter. When I became an adult, I changed it back to my given name, Panayotis, but I went with Panos. It's just a lot easier because most of my friends and colleagues, would absolutely kill the name. So Panos is a very easy way to remember. So I was born in Toronto of parents who were both Greek. However, my father's family are from Australia and my mother's family from Canada. So when I was eight, we left Canada and we moved to Australia, where I was there for about 8 years. And when I was 15, 16, we came back to Canada, where I have been, first martial art I ever did wasn't actually Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it was pancration.
Oh, yeah.
Just a complete fluke, other than it being from ancient Greece, but there was a club in Vancouver that taught pancration. And I had taken pancration because I needed to learn martial arts because I started working security in a nightclub. So I figured, what's the best way to, to learn how to protect yourself is by taking a martial art. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you folks were, as children, were sent by your fathers to do karate or taekwondo. But by the time I was, in my early 20s, I had discovered that, MMA was a thing. The first UFC where they had guys from different fighting styles fight against each other. And this, probably the smallest guy in the whole competition, Hoist Gracie, at 170 pounds, he essentially beat everyone with jiu-jitsu. Now, I really didn't know about Brazilian jiu-jitsu and I had gone into the first club that I went into, which was Pancration. But not too long after that, I discovered the world of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But I wouldn't take it until, years later. And at 38, I was in Cuba on the beach and I was tipping the scales at close to 300 pounds.
Wow.
And you're on the beach and, the local Cuban kids who were selling cigars and pop, hey, would you, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden I feel like I'm 400 pounds because they're all so skinny and I'm just so large. It was almost like they were running around me saying, free Willy, free Willy. and here I am, this orca on the beach waiting for high tide. So as soon as I got back to Toronto, I saw an ad in the paper. Do you want to learn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Give us a call. Free week. So I said, hey, it's free. I like to be thrifty with basically everything except not really.
Yeah.
And so I made a phone call a day later. Some guy called me on the phone and said, hey, you want to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? And I said, yes. They gave me a time and a place. And I went for my first Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class at Toronto Nogi under Professor Ian Freemantle.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
How long were you at Toronto Nogi for?
So I was at Toronto Nogi for a little over a year. Until I had my first gi class. They had one gi class at Toronto Nogi.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. I went from just under 300 pounds to 240 pounds in 4 months.
Wow.
Four XL shorts, four XL shirts. And the weight was coming off. And then they said, hey, you coming Friday night for a gi class? And I was like, what's a gi class? They said, well, they're like pajamas. But they're nicer,
yeah.
And it's the same concept, and you can grab and hold. And I said, hey, I'll try it out. I had the one class, and then I discovered, oh, I can slow things down.
Yeah.
I think we all know Michael Aviato of 5'2", 135 pounds of fearsome muscle
black belt,
black belt he had his way with me like I was a water buffalo, and he was a cheetah, jumping back and forth all over me and submitting me at will. But in the gi, I discovered I could slow things down.
Yeah.
And I started training at 38. And so when I could slow things down, it made things a little easier for me because my mind isn't super quick with where I'm going to go for my next move and what am I going to do? Where am I putting my leg? Where am I putting my arm, so to speak? And I really liked the gi. Unfortunately, at Toronto No-Gi, they were a no-gi club, and yeah. I wasn't going to be able to grow in the gi. So I migrated to Toronto No-Gi under Professor George Brito.
Toronto BJJ.
Toronto BJJ under Professor George Brito. Mm-hmm. And I was there for about 5 years. I got promoted to blue belt in that time. After about 5 years of Toronto BJJ, I discovered one of the coaches there, affectionately known as Judo Bobby, Professor Robert Curry. Mm-hmm. He decided to open up his own club. And it was smack dab in the middle of where Toronto BJJ is and where my house is. So it was logistically, it made a lot of sense. I knew I was going to get George Brito style Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Robert Curry, mm-hmm. under Bobby Curry. And I was also going to be able to train some judo also. And it took me half the time to get there. It was a brand new club, brand new opportunity, brand new beginnings. And I thought, this is all pluses. And because there's not a lot of students, I'm going to get a lot of one-on-one time. And because I'm thrifty, that makes a lot of sense.
Nice.
So after maybe 2 years, the pandemic started, which really shut down a lot of my training. Because of COVID, you know, as we all know, we really officially couldn't train.
Mm-hmm. Officially.
Now I'm a by my day job, I'm a transit operator with the Toronto with the TTC, and being around the public all the time, you really have to be careful depending on what people think about COVID.
Yeah,
you really have to be careful. You know, you could essentially pick up, you know, any sickness of, you know, a flu, a cough, COVID, whatever's out there, it's floating around in the air. You know, you're going to breathe it into. So training was out of the question for me. My wife is asthmatic. So the last thing I wanted to do was bring something home to my wife, which would, you know, create issues for her. Also, all her family are quite old. The elderly, which seem to be affected more by any kind of sickness in general. So I wasn't doing any Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but I did start doing a weight training regimen. I put more weight on, which isn't a good thing. I started looking for my clothes that I hadn't worn in a number of years because I just ballooned, you know, to about 260 pounds. And then from there, when we were allowed to start training again, I came back for a couple of months. And then, you know, boom, smack down into another lockdown, which I don't think anyone enjoyed, you know, but it is what it is. Then the whole thing with vaccinations came about. Just like in my job and with every other first responder or public sector worker, you had to get vaccinated or you weren't going to be employed. So that was a decision that I thought long and hard. And I have friends who are vaccinated and I have friends who are unvaccinated. And I had to make a decision what was best for me and my family. And unfortunately, we were not in a position to for me to go without a paycheck. Mm-hmm. You know, so I got vaccinated. Rolled the dice. That worked out well because I do not believe that I've been sick in the last couple of years.
You don't have a third eye.
I don't have a third eye. You know what? I actually, this is probably not good for a podcast, so I'm not going to mention that. I thought I did notice parts of my body being bigger, but then I discovered when I was losing my belly, it was just that. It wasn't other things seemed bigger. It was just the belly. The belly was getting smaller, and that was Anyhow, this will probably get edited out anyways. But
no, my lord,
heaven help me. So eventually, we were able to train again, but I was thinking really long and hard about coming back to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Over just before COVID came, I had an issue. I had torn up my meniscus. So that was an issue trying to get over that.
I've been there.
And getting promoted to purple belt, which was great. Mm-hmm. And then, not too long after that, I had an issue with gallstones. Eventually, I had surgery for gallbladder, and then that had put me out for, another month and a half or so. Then COVID came. So I think I was really close to quitting Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I didn't feel inspired. I remember a story from years ago. My favorite MMA fighter and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, Frank Mir. And I had inquired about Frank Mir because, he's getting old and he's going to retire. I believe he has retired from mixed martial arts. And I had asked a visiting black belt from Las Vegas. And I asked, hey, what's Frank doing? And the response he gave me was, we see him. For him, it's just another day in the office. And I thought about that years later. And going to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for me was becoming like just another day in the office. There was no magic anymore. I wasn't looking forward to, to competing. I wasn't looking forward to getting on the mats. It was more of a, okay, I've done this for, 8 or 9 years now. And I've had a layoff because of, everything that's going on in society today. So, do I really want this? Do I want to continue with this?
So when you walked into Rev,
yes,
you were just like, you were on the fence.
Oh, very much
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I could tell.
Actually, to be honest with you, I was only, I had said yes to a friend of mine to come visit Rev.
Okay.
And I had no intention of resigning. I absolutely had no intention of resigning. I wanted to spend the money somewhere else and maybe go do some striking or something to just find a new hobby per se, because I was really lucky through my life that I didn't need to learn how to fight or protect myself because I was having these issues. I wasn't getting beat up at school. I wasn't being bullied. I was always a big kid. I was 6'1" at 12.
Yeah.
My parents thought I was going to be 7-footer. And then I would have become a basketball player.
Yeah.
Right? I had the Vlade beard at 16. But unfortunately, I was growing in other places, just not height-wise. So I just wanted to learn a martial arts more for, to lose weight and get into a healthy lifestyle. If that could make sense to the people out there who are listening. Because not everyone wants to compete. Not everyone goes out and fights. Not everyone. I think there's a lot of us who... we enjoy doing it for the fact that we're getting some social out of it. We're getting some physical activity out of it. We're not doing the same thing every day. And it's good for your body, your mind, your body, your soul. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're out and about.
So what made you change your mind? Like when you were on the fence, like what pushed you over the edge towards going back to it? Like
two things. The atmosphere.
At the club.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. It was almost like going to Greece for the first time, going out of the plane, the heat just hits you and you're on the tarmac and you have this feeling of like, my family's from here.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple thousands of, hundreds of generations mm-hmm. of my forefathers. This is the land that they're buried in. Mm-hmm. That was the feeling I had when I was in Rev for the first few minutes and I was watching Jax.
Yeah.
I was watching Jax and then listening to Joel, the instructor. And then, then I was introduced to Father Ted. And we completely clicked right off the start. And I started to find something inside me that said, okay, you're going to give this one more try? Because I'm now feeling like I felt, at that first class at Toronto Nogi.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd lost that along the way. And there were some other instances too, over the last couple of years, over the last year of my stay at my last club, where hey, look, maybe it's time for a fresh beginning, a new look. Maybe I need to go somewhere else to rekindle what I've lost. Maybe I'll find it. Maybe I won't. But regardless of what happens, I'll tackle it head on.
And that kind of segues a little bit into our topic for today, because we were discussing this before. Like we were kind of saying, you're gonna come on the podcast, what are we gonna talk about? There's so many things we can talk about, and you kind of brought up a really good topic, which is the idea of you know, the old school versus new school. And I don't mean like technically, like technical jiu-jitsu and things like that, but it's kind of like the mentalities that we have, right? Like old school mentalities of how BJJ gyms were in the past, especially in the early years, as opposed to how they are now. And there's been a big change. Like, I think all of us can agree. I've discussed this somewhat with Father Thomas as well. It's like, you know, old school gyms. And like, I was listening to a podcast the other day where somebody was saying, you know, when they were, you know, they were an older jiu-jitsu practitioner, and they were saying, well, in the old days, you know, the jiu-jitsu gyms were like hardcore, and they were just much more, I guess you say, not meaner, but like, it was like more no holds barred, and people were just kind of rougher. And now it's kind of transitioned more into like a business, and it's a little more like the community oriented and things like that. And of course it's changed. So like the culture changes along with the people that are attracted to it. It was more niche back then. Now it's more mainstream, things like that. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Like this idea, like, you know, you brought up, you know, there's kind of like, you've been around now doing this for almost 9 years now. How long? 8-9 years.
You know what? It's closer to 10.
Yeah.
It's so closer to 10, but with the exception of, you know, a few months during the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, combined maybe 4 months during that 2 year stretch.
Yeah. So it's a decade, let's say. Yeah. Right. And Father Thomas, over a decade now, right? 2011,
December 2011 is when I started.
No, so you're just over a decade as well. I am nowhere near that. Like, I'm only 2.5 years into it. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu being, you know, such a new sport in the sense that, okay, it's been around for a long time. But as far as it being mainstream, right? Because, you know, we talk about UFC, first time people really saw it.
UFC, bro.
It was 93, right? 93, it was crazy. But it didn't get
November of 93, yeah.
Yeah. But even 93, even 95, like the pre-2000s, I guess you could say, it still wasn't everywhere yet.
No.
It was kind of like still very niche and things like that. So you could say the 2000s and beyond, and even beyond past that. Like when I was in seminary, I graduated seminary in 2002. Wow. And you never heard about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu anywhere. Like there were no clubs in Toronto, like very, very few. It wasn't mainstream. So, you know, even 10 years that you guys have been doing it, it's a big evolution in the sport. So, you know, like, so I guess my first question to you, Carlos, would be like, what is one of the main, because you brought it up when we were discussing, like, what is one of the main differences in mentality that you've been able to kind of see, observe, I guess you could say, over the years?
Well, I think when I think of a martial arts club, I think of honor, respect, I think of the martial tenets, you know, that Kano sensei, you know, with judo that he brought forward, you know, where you respect and honor your master or your elders. Mm-hmm. You bow as a sign of respect, not as a sign of servitude, but as a sign of respect. You know, when you're training with someone, you know, you're saying in Japanese, you know, thank you for training with me, right? You know what? Things like these things. Now, I know Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is not judo, and judo is not Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. But these were, when I first started training, for instance, at Toronto Nogi, you know, there was a lot of respect towards the instructor. It was almost like, when I look back at it now, it was verging on cult. It was verging on cult. But there's also a lot of good things that were coming out of that. You know, on top of the respect towards your instructor and your fellow athletes, you weren't trying to hurt them, mm-hmm. but you were competing. You were actually working really hard in your drills. Mm-hmm. When it was time to spar or roll, depending on, you know, where you're training, you were giving it your all, but you weren't trying to hurt them. Mm-hmm. You know, I've found that it's become more casual over the years. You know, for instance, when I went to Toronto BJJ, when I eventually left Toronto Nogi, I went to Toronto BJJ, I made the mistake of asking a brown belt to roll with me. And I see you're smiling there, Father Sandberg. You folks can both imagine it wasn't really good for me because I was freaked out at by 3 or 4 different people. And not that role, but the next role, the brown belt decided to teach me a lesson. Mm-hmm. And I think for...
So I'm ignorant because...
Oh, you never experienced that?
Well, because at my club, you can do that. You can ask a brown belt to roll and they'll roll with you. It's not a big deal. So different culture, different club. So,
yes.
So that was a no-no.
No, it was a no-no.
Okay.
So here I am, white belt, white belch. And for 8 minutes, I think I was submitted maybe seven times in the first minute. And then for the rest of the role, I had maybe a ton of pressure on every single part of my body for like a few seconds at a time. Mm-hmm. And I called the around the world, you know, you go side control, knee on belly, you know, full mount. And there was pressure after every single position, every single transition of position, lots of pressure. And that was their way of basically A, putting me in my place, and B, teaching me a lesson that you do not ask a higher belt. A higher belt will
what was the purpose?
You.
What was the purpose of that? Like in your, I'm not saying what is the ultimate purpose, because maybe, but for your perception now, having done this 10 years,
yes,
looking back retrospectively, was there a purpose to that kind of rule, that kind of, you know, culture, or was it completely just useless or
negative?
Like from your experience, like I'm going to ask Father Thomas too, because he trained in the same place. So
I think it comes down to, I think it's partially tradition. Father Sandberg, you can agree with that? It's partially...
Yeah, I think it's distinctly part of Brazilian jiu-jitsu culture from Brazil.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think the second part of it... Father Sandberg, did you have something else to add to that?
No, go on.
I think the second part of it is you're establishing a pecking order, and you're doing it as a week.
There's a hierarchy, of course, yeah.
Not just by belt, but there's a hierarchy, right?
Sure.
And they were making sure that I knew my place, and my place is you're here until your betters tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you become better? You put on the time on the mats.
Yeah, I'm not against that per se, because I think, yes, like there's hierarchies are important, right? And I can see that structure. Like I notice it like in older clubs where you even have a culture of like, you know, more traditional or even Brazilian clubs in the sense that, you know, the founders are Brazilian, you know, they'll still have the portraits of like Helio Gracie and, you know, whatever, whoever the master is that they're under, the lineage, or they'll have like more of the traditional kind of like things like, you know, you don't tie your belt in front of people, you turn your back, right? Things like that, bowing, things like that. And then I noticed that in the more kind of like, I don't want to say more progressive or modern clubs or secular, I don't know how you want to call it, none of that exists. Like in our club, we don't have any portraits up of anybody, right? There's no medals hanging on the walls, right? There's no, we bow out of respect, and that's promoted, which I like, because I agree with you. It's like, it's a sign of respect. But yeah, whether you tie your belt in front of somebody or not, or turn your, that doesn't exist at our club.
But do you not notice that there's a bunch of us who do that still?
To tell you the truth, I have not even noticed it.
And you know, and I'm going to say, I think the reason for that is that you're on one side.
Mm-hmm.
Where everyone is within a year.
Yeah, you guys are with
training.
The coloreds, and I'm with the whites. I'm over at the.
Let's just call it what it is.
It sounds so racist.
It's the elephant in the room, but I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah. You guys are the coloreds, the colored belts, guys, for our listeners.
Is it belt or is it belch?
It's belch.
Father Sandberg, is it belt or is it belch?
I guess it depends where you're. What part of the planet you're living on at the moment? North America or South America or Central America?
You know, it's interesting though that you bring up like the sign of respect. Like, in the church, we do the same thing. So in the church is a hierarchy, right? Hierarchy, mm-hmm. Very clear hierarchy. We're part of it. Me and Father Thomas, right? It's like,
yes,
we are. And even within the lay people who are not ordained, there's a hierarchy. Like, there's the elders in the church, the people who are like kind of like been there for a long time. There's the grandmothers, there's the board members, people who kind of the volunteers, but even as a hierarchy. And we even have the same concept of we don't bow. Well, actually, we do bow.
Yeah.
We bow to bishops. We bow to priests. We kiss their hand. For those, you know, for the listeners who don't know, like in the Orthodox faith, it's like we have this thing that seems extremely outdated to other Christians and to other people. They see it and it kind of freaks them out in our modern kind of Western society, right? Where we see a priest, bishop, whatever, and we kiss their hand.
Yes.
And it seems very, very archaic to people that don't know this, right? And to North Americans, because they're like, what are you doing? Like, it's not a king. It's not. And we try to explain, it's like, it has nothing to do with the individual. Like, I see Father Thomas in person, I kiss his hand.
Just like I kissed your hand today.
That's right. So, but I mean, like, he is not my subordinate, but I have seniority on him. In the sense that I'm his senior in the priesthood, right? But I still kiss his hand, and he kisses my hand. Why? Because we are respecting, like, the idea of kissing the hand is not It's not tied to the individual
person. Is it the institution, sir? You're
respecting
the institution.
That's right. Yeah. So we're respecting Christ because the priesthood is Christ.
Christ
is the high priest, right? And it's his priesthood. It's just bestowed upon us. We function within the church, but the church gives it to me and it takes it away. It's like putting on a gi, right? It's like the church is giving you this role. It's saying, okay, this is the mantle of the priesthood. This is the, right? It's vesting you. We even say it in our prayers when the priest gets ordained, right? The priest is, you know, the church is vesting you with the power of the priesthood. And you know what? If you don't want it, or if you can't handle it, or if the church deems that you're not, it's not time for you, or you're not supposed to, it can take it away from you, right? So it is a humbling thing. And so when we kiss the hand of the priest, we are respecting Christ, not the individual. The individual could be a horrible guy, right? Just like you could go to a club and let's say you could have your sensei or instructor, whatever you call him. The guy might not be a nice guy. He might be a great jiu-jitsu practitioner, but you still bow out of respect. The person's earned it, right? And, you know.
I remember the first time I got to roll with Professor George Brito. And what an amazing, I'll add this real quickly here. He's not only a fantastic Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, an athlete, he's a super good human being from my point, from where I've been within the Toronto BJJ family when I was with them. And he always had a minute to spare when I would send him a message. He may not get back to me like right away, but we would go back and forth for a few minutes. Or when I saw him in person, and the last time I saw him, I had gone to Toronto BJJ. I was invited by double black belt Joseph Santos.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag Joseph Santos.
Yeah.
And he says hello, by the way. And, you know, I had gone to class. George had just finished teaching gymnastica. He had motioned everyone to come in and, you know, get ready to roll. So I had found a spot, you know, where I was getting ready to roll with someone. And George actually came up to me and he chatted with me for a minute or two, asked how I was. And it was a really nice feeling, you know, because I hadn't trained there in a number of years. But he remembered me and we always had a very, very respectful relationship. You know, he's the head instructor. He runs the program. I'm just one of the little people. You know, I was never a competitor. You know, I was never someone who trained five nights a week. I was a hobbyist and for fitness, you know. And he took the time and it really touched me. You know, but anyhow, the first time I rolled with George, I bowed. And he looks at me, he says, "You don't have to bow." And I said, "Okay, thank you." And then the roll started and then I got smashed. But it was fun. You know, but it was fun. But yes, as you were saying, you know, I'm bowing because I'm trying to be respectful. But George is, okay, we're doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We're not doing judo. And he explained it. You know, his English back then was a little harder to understand than it is now, right? But I completely understood the tone of his, I do understand the difference now, which I didn't back then. But he basically said, "Oh, you don't have to bow," and then, you know, fist bump, and then I got smashed. It was great.
You know what? It helps when the person is of such a character that you want to bow, as opposed to feeling like you have to bow. Right? You're like, "Oh, I don't like this guy, but okay,
right.
I'm doing it." But when the person is a wonderful person,
yes,
they're a good person, and you want to, that's like the total package, right? Same thing in the church. It's like, it's yes, I kiss the priest's hand, right? But it's nice when the priest is also a good human being and is doing and what they believe in, where it's not idol worship, but it's a nice when those two things kind of coincide. When it's a good person, they believe what they're doing, they're a good practitioner.
Yes,
I guess you could say, because in the priesthood or in the Orthodox lifestyle generally, it's not that you don't have to be a priest for it. You can tell a person who's spiritual, like a person who actually believes what they say. And there are people of prayer and the people that actually show kindness and love. And you can see people who just basically say they do it, but they don't actually do it, right? And it draws you in. So I think that's a big, it's a big parallel. Like, I like it when you meet people like that, even in jiu-jitsu, where they inspire you, you know?
Yes. 100% agree with you.
You know, I don't know, Father, when was Father Thomas, like, you know, did you have the same experience when you rolled with George the first time?
Yeah, I rolled with him a lot. I can't remember the first time. I like rolling, like, very hard. Like, that's what I liked about Brazilian instructors. They have that, like, even here in Calgary, right? Josh Russell, he's a white person, right? He's Albertan. He's a gringo, but he went to Brazil to live, and he trained under Carlos Gracie Jr., right? So, yeah, so he brings back with him, at the time, of course, the anti-leg lock mentality, right, which is now beginning to change, I believe. And but, yeah, rolling with George. I've never submitted Professor George, but he rolls really hard. I've only taken him down once. I remember in Nogi, I took him down once, only time I ever took him down. But yeah, I like that, like rolling. You know, like, I don't know if you remember, on Mondays they used to do, like, of the three of the classes, there's a technique class, and then there's an hour of 3 minute rounds with 1 minute rest, and then there's an hour of 8 minute rounds with 2 minute rest. So I remember when he posted on Facebook, he'd be like, technique, and then 3 minute rounds to the death, 8 minute rounds to the death. And it's like, so it's like this different. That's what I like, because I do martial arts because I have a lot going on inside my own inner being, right? So it's more like a philosophical or metaphysical struggle against myself, I guess, right? As opposed to, like, because I don't need to lose weight, and I always, you know, I was into lifting weights and being healthy before. Like, I had definitely lived an unhealthy lifestyle in the past, right? And then I got into health, and then I got into martial arts, right? So, but yeah, rolling with George is, you'll definitely get smashed. And you go hard, for sure.
Yeah, but in a good way.
Yeah, in a good, like, humbling the ego, crushing the soul type of way. Yeah.
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 That's okay.
but it builds you up. Not like, you know, there's things in life that crush your ego and crush your soul, but they don't build you up, right?
Sure.
This is the opposite. Like, there's things that do crush all those things, but they also build you up at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. You can tell when the other person wants the best for you, as opposed to they're just trying to teach you a lesson because their ego got bruised.
Yeah.
There's a difference. You can tell by the way they roll. Like, and then they can still be hard. Like, they can still be, like, they can kill you, but you don't feel bad at the end.
Yeah. No, definitely.
The difference of saying it hurts or it hurts so good.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah.
Because with the big guys, we go hard too. Like, me and Paz, we go hard sometimes, you know. But it's not like, at the end, it's like, whether you got submitted or you submitted, and at the end, you're like, oh, I was so good. I say that all the time at the end of the mat. It's like, I got, like, bruising all over my face and, you know, deep burn because you just, just rub my face in it, whatever. And I'm like, oh, it was so amazing. It was so good.
But, you know what? And I completely agree with you. But one thing I love about, especially with the heavyweights, it's like the old cartoons, you know, where the sheepdog and the coyote. Have a nice day, George, as they're checking in their punch card. That's what it feels like.
The coyote, yes. They kill each other with the Acme rockets and stuff, and then at the end of the day, they punch out and they go back to,
see you tomorrow, George. See you tomorrow, Ted. It's, that's one of the things that I've always really enjoyed about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, whether it be from when I first started to you know, literally yesterday, you know, my last class was, it doesn't matter how hard or how hard we try to go, you know, on our rolls. As soon as the round is over, we're hugging each other, one, because we just went to battle with each other, and two, we're also doing it because we don't have the energy to get up on our own. So we're sort of trying to sort of seal off each other to help us up so we don't look too weak amongst the amongst the lighter weights, you know?
Yeah.
The normal size people.
Yes, the normal size.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a second question. So that was, like, real good. Like, we, you know, that was a big kind of, like, conversation about everything, which is great. But I did have a second question for you. And that is, okay, this kind of old school and new school. You've moved now to, like, this is your third dojo, right?
Yes.
No, fourth, because you were at Nogi, and then you went to Toronto BJJ, and then you went to Riverdale, and now you're ref. So some people, like, they tend to move, right? Like, they, for whatever reason in their life, right?
Yes.
But that, I find that there's also kind of different mentalities amongst different generations of jiu-jitsu practitioners with that stuff.
Yes.
Right. And, like, even before getting to that, I find that exists in the church too.
Okay.
Like, in the church, like, so, okay, you know, we call most of the time we just call our BJJ instructors like instructors, right? Like,
yes.
Or in our club, it's like Joel's like, you know, just call me Joel. Like, just call, don't you don't have to call me by a title. And then there's other places where it's like, no, I want you to call me instructor. Or other places say, I want you to call me professor or sensei, whatever, right? So there's different places and they have different culture. So, you know, I mean, the church, like people, different generations can be more territorial than other generations.
Okay.
So you have like old school parishioners who are like committed to one parish, their home parish, right? Like here, I'm at St. Constant Helen here in West Toronto. And it's like, we have people who have been coming here their whole lives. Some of them are founders of the church and they're hardcore. They just come here, right? They don't go anywhere else. They might visit, but like, you know, they're very dedicated to their own community. They're dedicated, let's say, to the same priest they've been confessing to for years and years and years and years, right? Their spiritual father, as we say.
Yes.
Right? And they do not believe in change and like that. And then you have, and they may even get offended if people kind of pick up and go somewhere else. It's like, well, we're not good enough for you, right? It's like, or well, you don't like the space anymore, right? Like, it's better somewhere else, right? So people get territorial. But then I find that the younger generation, at least in the church, they don't have any, for better or for worse, right? They don't have those types of hangups in the sense that they float around a lot more, right? So they're not connected to one place.
Yes.
They'll float around. I don't want to use the word shop around, although that exists as well. You know, I go here a little bit. I go there a little bit. You know, I talk to this one priest. I talk to this other priest. You know, so they don't really have roots anywhere, which is the negative aspect of it. And they tend to not be committed or what's the word? We talked about loyalty. We were talking about this
yes.
leading up to this podcast, right? So there's like less loyalty to one place because it's more this kind of like secular non-community mentality. It's like, well, you know, I'll go wherever I can find what I want, like shopping, right?
Yes.
Whereas the more old school or older mentality is like, no, I'm all about the loyalty, about the community. I'm connected to one place and I don't want to float around, right? So in the Orthodox tradition, we as priests, we try to, we don't want to teach people to be territorial, but we do emphasize to people that it's not good to float around from a spiritual point of view. We say, yes, go wherever you want. You're free. You don't have like, you're not tied down anywhere. But from a consistency point of view, from a community point of view, it's not good to float around. It's good to like pick a home parish, right? Pick a home parish, put some roots down, you know, choose a spiritual father, which is like the person you confess to. Don't jump around to different people, just like when you have a family doctor, right? Stick to the same person so you can work with them. You know, you have consistency. And I think it's important in jiu-jitsu as well. But I do find that even from like an instructor's point of view, like there are some instructors, like you mentioned, you saw George Brito from Toronto BJJ, you saw him years after, and you don't train there anymore. And he was just like, hey, what's up? You know, like, and very nice, right? But there are other instructors where you leave their dojo, you're dead to them.
Oh, I know. It's yes, like,
you
yes,
know,
yes.
I don't want to hear about you. I don't want to talk to you. You are, you know, you have become the Judas.
Right? Persona non grata.
Yeah. So what, I don't know, like what, both of you, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this kind of phenomenon in jiu-jitsu, you know, because in the Orthodox, it's like, it's not so extreme. Like, you know, if somebody leaves, it's not like you're, you know, I don't want to hear, see you again. In the Orthodox, kind of like, please come back. Please, we like to see you again. Please, like, we don't like it, but that you're floating around, but it's you know, please come back. But in jiu-jitsu, it's like these, it's like this dichotomy. It's like there's people who are totally cool with people kind of going around, and there's people who just, it's a big no-no, right? Thomas, what are your thoughts? I'll ask you first before I ask Father Thomas. I don't know.
Okay, so I've been blessed over the last 10 years with a stable employment. My wife and I, we don't have children. We do have a small dog who's literally like our kid.
Yeah.
And some days he's cost us like a kid would. But we don't have the expenses. And my wife, being a professional in her field, she makes a decent living, and I make a decent living. Thank you to God, you know, for having the opportunity to contribute and to get a decent paycheck, which always makes a difference in your life, right? So that being said, without the time constraints of having a family, you know, I've been able to put some of my energies, you know, and money into training wherever I want to go and train, right? So that's really helped, because as we know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it can be expensive to learn the art. You know, it is what it is. yes, it's a martial art, but it's also business. And in order for them to keep their doors open, you know, they have to charge, you know, they have to charge whatever the price is. And a lot of people, if you're a student or if you're paying a lot of money in rent and insurance for your car and, you know, you're hopping around, maybe you have two jobs. Sometimes money is an issue while you can't train here or have to go train over there.
Money is always an issue.
Yes. So that being said, money wasn't an issue. So I was able to, you know, I went from a very small gym to a larger gym, and it was understood, okay, Panos is going to a bigger gym because he can't get what we want here. And there was never an issue. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I went to another club because the club that I was at, they would not be able to provide for me. So they completely understood. I never had that issue. I was never told by Professor Ian Freemantle, Panos, don't ever come back. I believe we have a good / cordial relationship. There's mutual respect, you know, so I could always go back at any time, but no gi is not for me. I'm a gi man. I'm a gi man for life. No offense, Father Sandberg. I know you're a gi man. So
no gi man.
A no gi man, pardon me. So anyhow, when I went from Toronto BJJ to Riverdale, I always believed that Toronto BJJ, the instruction is amazing. Huge classes, lots of training partners. But logistically, if I wanted to train, it was a 3.5-hour affair for 1 hour of training. Mm-hmm. I would go on my lunch breaks because I have fairly big splits because of the work that I do. So it would take me a little over an hour to get to the dojo, which was on the other end of the city. Then I would train an hour. Then I would change 15 or so minutes, a little bit of social, another 10 minutes there. Then I would drive back.
Yeah.
Before I knew it, I spent, you know, 3 hours and 15 minutes to train 1 hour.
Yeah.
And I did that for 4+ years, close to 5 years. When the opportunity came to, you know, to go over to, you know, Professor Bobby Curry's club at Riverdale Martial Arts, all of a sudden it was less than 20 minute drive.
Yeah.
And because of where they're located, I was able to work in that area so I could finish work and go straight to the dojo and I could get 2 or 3 hour sessions, you know, and then drive home 15 minutes, maybe 20 if I was taking my time.
Oh, Thomas, what do you think about that?
I remember when I first got to Toronto, if church-wise, I'd meet people and I'd ask them where they went to church and they'd list like 4 churches they go to.
Yeah.
Right. Like the no roots thing is right. The thing is, like, if you have no roots, then you just fall over when the wind blows you. Right. Like, you know, when you go, if you go hiking in the Canadian Shield, you'll see trees that literally have no roots because they're on the shield. And then you can see when they fall over. With jiu-jitsu, George is always really good. I figured he always was like George, Professor George Guido. Like, he definitely has like an older mentality, like the Brazilian mentality, but he also has that your jiu-jitsu journey is your own unique journey. I think it's different. Like, if you leave gyms for different reasons, like, you know, there's like, then that's when you become a karate. Like, you know, if you betray people, if you're just moving because like life circumstances or, you know, or you need something to rekindle your passion, I guess, I don't really think that's like a karate. You know, if you're like literally across the street to the club across the street, you know, that maybe would be a different thing. But I think it's very important. Like, I've changed clubs. I've never changed them like on my own exact volition, let's say, right? Like, because I came to Toronto to go to school. And it's funny because I really like no-gi, right? So I was actually looking at going to Toronto no-gi. But like, I don't want to get into jiu-jitsu politics, but guys, some guys who I'm not a big fan of Robert Drysdale, right?
Oh.
Yeah. And so it's like, I was like, okay. I asked, who did I ask? Professor Daniel Cobb in Winnipeg where I should train. He said I should train at Toronto BJJ. I wasn't sure, right? Because I like leg locks. So I remember I asked Josh, the owner of Josh Rapport, what's the rules here on leg locks, this and that? And then I remember my first no-gi class when George still taught the no-gi classes, doing technique. And then when it came to training, the sparring, he was like, you know how he is, he yells, right? So he's like, knee reaping, heel hooks, calf slices, takedowns, scissor takedowns, whatever you want, let's go. So I was like, thank you, God, let's go.
Like, this is it. You're a Sith Lord.
Like, you can start from standing. You can, like, it's like if you, you know, that's what the tapping out's for, if you think you're going to hurt, right? You tap out. So, and then, yeah, so I started training there. And then there was an issue with rank. I wasn't sure. I was like, I was going back to Winnipeg. But then I talked with Josh and I talked with Professor Daniel. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be ranked and train under Toronto BJJ officially, right? Like, that's where I'm going to spend the most of my time going forward because I don't know what the future is going to hold. Because I'll only be in Manitoba like summers or Christmas. And then there was drama at that club where I trained. It was Gracie Mate to Winnipeg, right? Where I had trained under Professor Rodrigo Mandaruca from White to Purple. Yes.
Legend.
He went to San Diego. The legends in Canadian BJJ, like in the West, is definitely Professor Rodrigo Mandaruca, Professor Josh Russell, and then at other parts of Alberta, of course, you have Professor Luke Harris, right? Prince Albert. And then, of course, in the East, you have, of course, Professor George Brito, right? And so I, what was my point here? I asked, yeah, so that club, when I came back, I could kind of tell, like, go back for Christmas, I had something going on. One of my friends was one of the owners, right? There was like a couple owners when Professor Mandaruca went to San Diego to teach, because Hoyler Gracie asked him to teach. And so I asked my friend, I'm like, what's going on here? And he's like, I'm selling my part of the club and I'm starting my own club, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of knew what was going on. And I guess Professor Daniel Cobb switched. Some would consider this a Kronta thing. He left Professor Rodrigo Mandaruca and Hoyler Gracie whenever he went under, you know, Pat Hooligan, who's in Ottawa, right? Under Henzo Gracie, Ottawa. And I'm very thankful to everyone. Everyone in Manitoba let me train for free. All 4 years I was a student. I didn't pay anyone nothing.
That would never happen in Toronto.
All right, yeah.
For free for 4 years.
Hey, for 4 years, Josh helped me out a lot. He definitely helped me out a lot. He gave me a student discount. Every time I needed to pause my membership at Toronto BJJ, he saved my time. Even like, you know, there's, you have to do things 30 days in advance. In the emails, he would override them, say, pause his membership. Like he... Definitely Josh Trump BJJ did everything in his power to make training for someone who did not work for 4 years as cheap as possible. So thank God for that. And so in Manitoba, yeah, I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? Like you have your friends who you train with from one club and the club's kind of going, it's becoming like kind of like three quarters one way, one quarter the other. So who am I going to go with, right? And I'm like, I'm going to go with my friend Randall. Because he started his own club, non-affiliated, kind of the way Studio 540 is in California. That's kind of like, I guess, the mentality, like no affiliation, everyone's welcome, no drama, just be a good person. And not that you don't have to be a good person to go into the other club, right? But they were going different directions. And I liked the way Randall was going, my friend Randall was going, and he was a good coach. And so that's where I started training in Manitoba, was under what became known as now Socius BJJ. And I think it's good to train like consistently with the group, like a part, like you build a relationship, because it's like, you know, when you go train in a new club, you can't like go and try and like 100% murder people. You got to be like feeling things out. You don't want to get hurt. You don't want to offend anyone. You don't know the club culture. But when you do have people you train with for like 4 or 5 years, you can be like, I am trying to hurt you and you're trying to hurt me, but not like hurt, like violent death. You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to roll really hard and you can trust them. There's a different level of trust that you don't get all the time. Like if you're just, it's different, I guess, if you're just going open mats at all these different clubs, you know, eventually you would get to know the people from your routine, but it's, but you also got to do what you got to do. And even like when I came to Calgary, when I found out I was officially coming here, I asked Professor George Beadle, like, where should I train in Calgary? And I said, I noticed that him and Josh Russell were friends on Facebook. And he said, yeah, train under Josh. Josh is good. So I had another friend who had moved to Winnipeg here. I trained with him downtown. And eventually I went and checked out Josh's club one Friday night. So that's where I train now. And so what is that? So I think it's really funny. So technically when I started jiu-jitsu, the club I started at was Canadian Fighting Center. So Rodrigo Mandaruca was there and they had an issue and he was going under Hoyler. The CFC club still exists in a different location now. So he went under Hoyler. So I guess I was white, but I didn't know what was going on. So I don't really know if you consider that a club switch. That's just, I'm just going wherever the professor is going because that's who the professor is. And then from there, I trained at Toronto BJJ because I was going to school in Toronto. And then, yeah, I would say the only real thing where I like had to make a decision between this club and this club was when that one Gracie Humeta split kind of into Socius BJJ and Hensel Gracie Ottawa affiliate. Right. Like
huge names.
Yeah, it's like I don't know enough about Pat Cooligan. I can't say anything positive or critical about like him as a human being or jiu-jitsu or nothing like that, right? I know he's super very nice. Like when Nathan Dos Santos from Toronto BJJ during the pandemic went to Orlando to do one of those first IBJJF tournaments, Pat was always open to everyone. If you follow him on social media, he's always like, if you're ever in Florida, you can come train here, blah, blah, blah. So I know for sure he's a super nice guy, super open, super kind of the same goals as George, looking to advance Brazilian jiu-jitsu in Canada, like from a Canadian perspective, even though he is American and Canadian, I guess, because he's clubs both. But for me in Winnipeg, you got to make a choice where you're going to train, right? Like you can kind of see what their people's values are is, right? You know, different people have different focuses. And I was like, well, I'm going with my friend. When I'm in Manitoba, I'll train with my friend Randall and those guys who are still under Professor Rodrigo Mandaruca, right? So, and then eventually, yeah, he did get his black belt from Professor Rodrigo Mandaruca around the same time as I got my black belt from Professor George. I think I got my black belt from Professor George like maybe a couple weeks sooner. But yeah, so I think it's just the intention of why you're switching clubs. There's definitely people who like go around for like what it costs less money, right? And stuff like that. And even in Manitoba, you meet guys like that. But I think you have to take into account your own journey as well as the community aspect of training.
And just like to jump in, like, I think it's also like anything. And again, like in the same thing, like when we talk about orthodox, it's like, there's gotta be balance, right? So it can't, like, extremes are always bad, right? So
yeah.
This whole concept of like the kind of the old school versus the new school and like loyalty and things like that is like, it's the reasons why you move. Like most instructors are good. Like you said, like if you're moving away, well, okay, you're moving away. Like if you have another job somewhere
or. Yeah, there's no affiliate club in that area.
Yeah, you can't make it. You can't afford it for like legit reasons, whatever. I think most instructors, most owners are not going to be upset about that because they're like, oh, this is part of life, right? And then, of course, there's always going to be the outlying extreme situations where, like, yeah, you leave for the rival group or whatever, or you take people with you, or, you know, all this kind of politics that happen, right? But putting those aside, like the really, you know, the bad stuff where you just don't act well, generally speaking, you know, there's a balance between the person, like the actual person who's training, and then the actual instructor, right?
But let me ask you a question there.
Sure.
When we talk about loyalty, mm-hmm. right? Are we being loyal to a club or are we being loyal to a product? That's number one. And, yes. And then part one A question is it a two-way street? Mm-hmm. Because I believe that all life should be a two-way street. It shouldn't be a one-way street.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll discover, and I really hope you don't discover this in your journey, but you know, the road ahead for you is I hope is going to be very long in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And it doesn't end when you you hit your black belt. Mm-hmm. I hope it continues for another decade or two, right? But here's my question, because I have experienced over my time, and I think a lot of other people will have too, where you will sometimes feel that, you know, it's not a two-way street,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's not a two-way street, and it's disappointing when you discover that it's not a two-way street. A colleague of mine, a teammate of mine, he transitioned from Riverdale. He's out in Alberta right now. He's actually out in Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
I hope that you folks get a chance, Father Sandberg, to train. Okay, Osbert Peters, hashtag Osbert, Osberto Peters. Okay, he's in Cochrane, Alberta, just outside of Calgary.
Yeah.
Okay? And, you know, he's at a club out there. Now, I'm not sure where his club is, but I will find out and I'll, you know, send you guys that info. But you know, he had told me a long time ago, right? These are, I think these are wise words. And I wish that I had found out about it, you know, when I first started my jiu-jitsu journey, is, you know, you have to really like what you're getting product wise. You can't think that this is one thing when it could only be something, when it's only maybe something else, because you're thinking, hey, you're getting a family, you know, you're getting an after school, an after work family, you're learning a cool skill, right? You're getting some fitness out of it. You're doing a little bit of socializing too, but maybe in reality, what it is that it's a lot less of family. It's a lot less of, it's more of, this is the product and, you know, this is what we're going to give you. Don't get caught into that. Oh, maybe that this is like a family, you know, no, we're not going to go out for beers, but you know, don't get caught into that. You know, if you treat everything, like, let's say you treat it like it's a secular thing, we're only here for this. Okay. Yeah. Everything can be cool afterwards, but we're only here for this and let's leave it at that. And if you want to have a social media relationship, if you want to have a, we have an outing once every 6 months where we meet up and do a barbecue, you know, that's cool, but don't think it's maybe a little bit more than that because it's a martial art. Mm-hmm. So I discovered that maybe that's what it is, you know? So it's a one-way street for the club. You know, it's not necessarily a two-way street for you, right? So I learned that the hard way, right? And so, you know, maybe that was part of one of the reasons why I felt that I was going to give up on this. You know, I think that's, you know, I definitely know that that was part of it. That definitely, you know, played a factor, not a huge piece of the pie, but definitely it was a piece of the pie, you know?
Yeah. So you actually answered my question before I even asked it.
Which is great. Sorry about
that. No, that's good though. It's like, I didn't even have to ask it. Like, but that's where I was going with it. I was like saying that, you know, nobody is obligated. Like if you're going to open a business, so like, let's say I'm a black belt and I'm going to open up a gym, right? Okay, I'm not obligated. Like no one's forcing me. I can do whatever. I can create whatever kind of gym culture I want.
Yes.
Right. I can create whatever kind of business I want. And like you said, some people, they're going to create a family. They're looking to create a more of a family environment. Other people, it's all business. It's all money. Right? It's like, you're a number. Come in. If you don't like it, bye-bye. Right? So yes, there's different approaches. And some clubs are like really a lot like a family. Some of them are really just business. Some of them are just a little bit in the middle. Right? It depends on the size, all this kind of stuff. Right? So like that I understand. I don't really take offense to it or, you know, have a problem with that because I cannot control or it's not my place to dictate to the person, to the owner or to the instructor, what kind of culture. What I do, or at least as a young person in jiu-jitsu, I guess you could say I'm still a white belt and, you know, only 2.5 years of doing it, is I think most of the conflicts and this kind of mentality comes from the actual person who's running it and what kind of personality they are and how transparent and honest they are.
Yes.
Right. That's all. 100%. That's all. You know, if you say, hey, listen, you know, it's very clear communication, right? It's like, hey, this is what we do here. Right. Very, very clearly. This is what you can expect. This is what you're, you know, this is a business here. This is a product, right? And if that's what you're looking for and nothing more, this is what we're doing. This is what we have for you. Or this is a community. We expect people to pitch in. Like, and I've visited different places, right? Like, you know, and big gyms, small gyms tend to be more, you know, not better or worse. It's just, you know, you have a small town gym. People are going to be more family oriented. You know, they're not going to have the same amount of money or resources. And people are going to be pitching in, mopping the floors, cleaning up, things like that. Whereas you're going to go to a bigger commercial or a big affiliate gym. You're more of a number because that's just the way it is. Because, you know, I'm just saying, like, it is what it is. I understand that. I understand that when you have hundreds, if you have a big affiliation, you have multiple gyms, maybe thousands, it's not going to be the same, right? But even in those situations, it comes down to both what kind of personality you are and what kind of personality the instructor is.
Oh, I completely agree with
that. I think that's the same thing in the church too, because how many times do we, at least amongst the priests, we like to complain all the time, the priests. Complain, complain, complain. People don't go to church. Blah, blah, blah. But how often do you hear a priest say, maybe people are not coming to the church because it's my fault? Like to have the humility to say, okay, instead of complaining about people, they're not Christian enough. They're not religious enough. They don't care. I'm here. This is the sob story of the priests, right? Father Thomas knows this. He's heard it for like how many years in seminary, and he's even heard it from me. I'm guilty of it too, right? But like, how often do we just say, well, okay, they don't go, but like, what are we not doing correct? Or, you know, are we not making inviting? And I started thinking about this from another podcast I was listening to, actually a brand new one, from, another really great black belt who's out in Trenton. I was telling you about,
yes,
Jordan Presinger. He has the new, he has a Limitless BJJ, right? And he has like a really big YouTube channel where he does breakdowns and things like that. But he just started a podcast, Jordan Talks Jiu-Jitsu, right? And the last one, he said something, and I started thinking about this in preparation for this, for this kind of like show that we're doing today. And he was saying, well, when I started, he goes, I was like, I think he was a purple belt when he opened up his own gym, his first gym. He wasn't at the same location. So he became a proprietor, he became an owner of a gym because he was really into it. And he was only a purple belt, right? So he had to deal with what do you know? And, you're just a purple belt and all this kind of stuff and people looking down and all this kind of stuff, right? So all this negativity. Okay, he's super talented. I think he went to black belt like in 7 years, I think, right? So he was saying that in his first location, it was small and it was kind of dirty. They didn't take care of it as well. Like a lot of clubs, it was like a warehouse and the mats were clean, he goes, and like maybe took care of that. But like, there's like dust bunnies everywhere and like spiders and yeah. So, his club wasn't like the cleanest place. And he was recounting like when he had a woman who came and she joined up and she kind of, she trained there for like a couple of months and then she quit. Right. And she wrote him a letter. And she was like, it was like a scathing review, which is basically saying, well, because he asked her, he's like, why did you leave? Why? Because it was his fledgling years. He doesn't want people to quit, right? Like he's, you can't survive financially. So yeah, so she was honest with him. And she said, and she just gave him this horrible review. She's like, this place is like falling apart and you don't care about cleanliness, you don't care about that. And he said in his podcast, he goes, it hurt me. I got defensive, but she was right.
Yeah.
Right? So he goes, after the initial ego that got, I got my back up, I had to take a minute and think about it and say, well, she's right, which means I'm wrong, which means I need to change. And he goes, then we changed. We basically, we had to like clean better, do this. We had to change the culture of the gym because we're just going to keep losing people. It's just this idea though, that this person was able to take the criticism, right? And there's a lot of instructors who will not. They'll just get it. They'll be like, you don't like it? Get out, right? Okay. But then you don't evolve. You don't become better, right? So it's just like an example of somebody who was able to like have the humility to accept, valid criticism, because there's invalid and, criticism that doesn't make any sense because there's just people who are just troublemakers, right? Or they're just looking for problems, right? But, that exists as well. This idea, this kind of, I don't want to say it's a macho thing, but it's more like, I'm the boss. This is my culture. And if you don't like it, get out. Right.
It's my way, the highway.
My way, the highway. Right. So,
never happens in BJJ.
Never. Yeah. Never. Right? Yeah. So it's like, but so to have the humility to be able to accept criticism and to be able to see maybe that you've overlooked something or that you've, you haven't given the proper attention to certain areas. I think that's a huge, huge part of the culture. And maybe the old school, since we're coming back and maybe kind of tying all this stuff together, this wonderful conversation we've been having is that, the old school doesn't mean that there weren't phenomenal instructors in the early years of BJJ. But I tend to see from what people's stories and what they're telling me is that there wasn't so much of that self-awareness. It was kind of like, come here, go hard, right? Pojada, and that's it. And if you don't like it and you don't like spiders on the ground or you don't like whatever, we don't have air conditioning, get out. And it's like, it's not for everybody and I don't care. And now, yes, there is a product in the sense like we're more commercially minded, especially North America, right? And people are trying to cater a little more to the customer, quote unquote. But it can also be a good thing in the sense that, okay, you get to take the feedback and make it a better environment for the people. As much as you can, right? To keep people.
Right? I definitely agree with the premise of what you're saying, but I also think that you can get
disagree.
Better.
You can disagree. It's okay.
No, we'll disagree on the mats, my friend.
Yeah.
No, I'm just joking. But this is what I will say. I think that you should try to make your product better, but you shouldn't get rid of what helped make your product good in the first place.
Sure.
So, for example, one day, God willing, okay, and I'm going to work really hard for this, I would like to attain my brown belt. When that day comes, I would like to get Shark Tanked. And I'd like to get Shark Tanked for minimum an hour, because I know that if I'm lucky enough to get to brown, and remember, luck is lots and lots of hard work, right? What does George, what does Professor George Riedel say? What luck is? Paul Sandberg, you wouldn't, because you've been around him a lot.
Luck? Well, you mean like the more we train, the luckier we
get? Yes, there you go.
My friend Mike always sends that to me because he came from Winnipeg to train at Toronto BGA a couple of times. And so He always comments, the more we train, the luckier we get.
There you go. So the more I train, the luckier I get, I'll get to brown. And then I'll have to do double of that to get to black one day, okay? I want to be Shark Tank because someone who I respect greatly, and I don't really get to chat with him that much, is a Toronto BGJ black belt, Robert Bentley. A lot of respect for him. A lot of respect for guys like Joseph Santos. A lot of respect for Nacho. A lot of respect for Mike Z, Bobby Curry, all those guys. You know, I look up to them, and I've managed to learn a little bit from each of them. You know, Nathan DeSantos, Mosley, you know, they're all killers. But here's my thing. All these people who came before me, you know, they all got to experience the gauntlet. They all got to experience, you know, being Shark Tanked for an hour or two. You know, I've now discovered that those things aren't going on at a lot of schools, you know, where when you assert a certain rank, they're not doing it anymore. There's no more gauntlet. My Lord, this to me is part of the whole package. It's like I'm ordering a pizza and there's no pepperoni.
Yeah.
Because I want to be put in I want to be tested in such a way that I need to survive, not just, you know, counter with offense, but I need to survive, you know, for an hour or 2 hours, depending on, you know, which belt it is. And if I can't do that, to me, I don't feel like I'm getting what I paid for, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think you should get rid of that to accommodate other people. I think
especially the gauntlet thing, that's a controversial one. Like, I came up getting the gauntlet with, you know, you get the bruised back and all that stuff. Like, you know, I've seen even videos, I think, like with Nick and Nate Diaz, right? Where in Lodi, California, some guys like had tennis rackets. So it's like,
I have a gauntlet, sorry.
Oh yeah, what is it?
So when I got my blue belt at Toronto BJJ, you know, I'm a bigger guy, right? I'm a heavyweight. Sorry, I'm an ultra heavyweight, right?
There you go.
And so I start going from one end of the dojo to the other, and there's got to be 40, 50 guys on each side. And I'm making my way up, and I've decided, you know what? I'm really happy I got here. I've worked somewhat hard, you know, and I've got a long way to go, but I'm enjoying the journey, and I'm making my way down to the end as I'm getting strapped, so to speak. And then I turn around and I've got this massive smile on my face because I'm trying to shut everything out. And I'm just trying to say to myself, you know what? You've attained a level which you probably would never have thought of if you didn't come out and do the hard work, and, you know what, enjoy it. You know, because you're now going for the next level. And I've got a massive smile on my face from ear to ear. And someone says, hey, Pados isn't running. He's obviously not in any pain. So I'm like, maybe I should pick up the pace a little bit. So I pick up the pace and I get to the very end. And one of my training partners, you know, from back then. And I unfortunately can't remember his actual name. I only remember a nickname, and it's not very nice, so I'm not going to say that. He says to me, dude, what gives? And I said, bro, I don't run in freaking warm. I don't run in the warm-ups. If they see me running, they're going to expect me to run in the warm-ups. Come on. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. And obviously, I wasn't being 100% serious, but, you know, I just thought it was kind of funny because nobody else had gotten criticized for smiling. And here I am smiling and you know, it is what it is. I'm not Nick and Nate Diaz level of getting pain. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone is on this earth, you know, at their level. Yeah. But, you know, I was just really, really, really enjoying the moment. And I was happy that I had put some time in and I had gotten you know, a little reward. And that to me was a reward.
I've never gotten the gauntlet, and I don't know if I ever will. Depends on the club you're at, but what are you going to do? It is what it is. And there's different cultures. And, I agree with you though, that there is something to be said about many traditions that kind of work. They work because they create, what's the word? They create almost like a emotional catharsis.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember when I first joined, and I was only like 2 months in, and we had the first grading that I ever went to, and I loved it. Like, I wasn't able to participate fully because I didn't know anything, right? I was just a brand new white belt. So I remember there was like, back then it was two clubs. Now there's one location. There's two locations back then. And we used to have like, we'd all go to the biggest location, and they would have like over like 120 people or something like that at the grading. It was pretty big. And you know, they had us white belts off to the side doing kind of like circuit training, like learning like break falls, all this kind of, like, you know, when we weren't ready to roll because we didn't know anything, right? But the people who were, you know, the more advanced and the higher belts, they basically, the way the grading was that you know, they were all just basically doing, I think they did like 18, maybe there were 5 minute rolls, but 18 of them straight through with only 1 minute breaks. So it was like this marathon of rolling, right? And it was just nonstop, go, 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 1 minute rest, switch partners, right? And it was 18 or 20 rolls straight without break, right? And because 1 minute is not that much, right? To just barely get up and find a new partner, right? And, you know, and Joel would go around, he'd be watching everybody, right? Just kind of, and then after that was done, there were super fights, right? If whoever...
2 hours of rolling. Literally two hours of rolling, right? And then super fight.
Then there were super fights of not everybody, but like, you know, certain people that he wanted to kind of see, and maybe he was on the fence with, or who knows, right? Like whatever he wants to kind of test, right? And so then we were all sitting in a big circle, and there were those super fights. And that was amazing to watch. And as a newbie, I'm like, wow, this is like hard and terrifying, but at the same time exhilarating, right? Because, and then at the end of that whole process, well, there was grading, right? Starting obviously with the lower belts, moving up to the higher belts. And after that, it was a big potluck. Everybody got food, right? So it was the community aspect of it as well. Everybody had brought food, they put it on the side. And then when all that was done at the end of the day, it was like 4 hours later, whatever, when that whole kind of like thing, we all sat down and we had food together, right? So that experience was like, this was pre-COVID, right?
Yeah.
And that was like, we haven't had it obviously because of COVID and all this kind of stuff going on, right? And it's been like subdued and kind of like, you know, but that was like amazing. That was amazing. And I know like a lot of clubs now, they're stopping that, or they're not doing that anymore, or they're just kind of like more kind of plain things going on, right? But I think that like you said, that could be a mistake, you know, getting rid of that, because, you know, it's not about the grading per se, it's the experience, right? I'd rather go through that whole experience. And even if you, like, obviously everyone likes to get promoted, but even if you don't get promoted, like just going through the whipping in the back, right? The gauntlet of just like, you know, the shark tanking, right? Like, you know,
all the shark tanking.
That is something that I think is extremely important. And if you lose that, you lose a little bit of that part of the culture, and you build up. And like you said, you feel like, you know, like I did it. And like, I don't know, it's psychological. You may feel like you deserve something more.
Guys, listen. Right. I'm a glorious amateur when it comes to hunting. Okay, I'm a glorious amateur. Okay, it's not about the 3% of the whole hunt where you actually pull the trigger and get the animal. It's everything that goes along with it. It's the being miserable at 3:30, 4 in the morning, getting your gear on and going to your spot. It's waiting for these animals to show up. It's waiting for, you know, 30 minutes before sunup to, you know, pull your rifle or shotgun out of its sock and load as quietly as you can, even though the guys around you are making more noise than a bull in a china shop, okay? That 3 or 4 percentile where you actually hit an animal and you start, you know, field dressing it and what have you, you field dress it, what have you, is such a small part of it, but you're out there for the whole experience. And I feel that if you take certain things away, including, you know, the everything that goes on in the grading, you're taking away of a percentage away from the whole experience, where you're going to feel like when everything's all said and done, when you can't do it anymore, You're going to look back and you're going to say, you know what? I missed out there. Yeah. Right? That's how I feel. And I think a lot of other people feel the same way, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, on that note, because we've been going now for like, I think this is one of the longest podcasts we've ever done. It's like almost an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
Of discussion. Wow, so who knows? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe we'll break it up into two episodes. Who knows? Because this is like a really great discussion and I'm happy we had it. But I think we'll wrap it there.
Okay.
You know, on that note, what do you think, Father Thomas?
Sounds good.
Yeah. You know, I want to thank you, Panos, because I knew this was going to be a good conversation because you like to talk, and that's not an insult. It's not because I like to talk too. You know, and it's like, so you're easy. It's not the word you like to talk. You're easy to talk to. So that's a good thing. That's a very good skill.
Easy to talk with. Yeah.
Yeah. To talk with, right. And just to have discussions. And I knew we would have a good discussion. I think today was a very good discussion, and I thank you for coming on. You know, it's like, this is kind of like our last recording before our kind of our summer break, although I might be doing some recordings on vacation. We'll see, but I'm glad that, you know, we're able to do it, and hopefully we'll have you on in the future as well.
That would be my pleasure. Thank you very much, Father Sandberg. We're so happy that that it could be the three of us, getting it done. And it's nice to see you, you know, and Zoom person.
Yeah.
You know? And thank you so very much, Father Ted. It's a huge honor considering that you've had some, you know, some awesome guests. And it's a huge honor to even be asked. And I'm happy that I was able to accommodate and, you know, work out a time with you guys. Because, you know, you're very busy. You're constantly coming from work. And there is a time difference. So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And, you know, Father Ted, I know you're busy here wrapping up things before you go on vacation. And, you know, hey, I just worked a 12-hour day. And, you know, but I wanted to make sure that I was able to come out here. And and I learned a lot, too, from you guys. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you so very much. And I'm blessed too because of this.
We appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.
Well, everybody, and to all our listeners out there, I hope you enjoyed the episode as well. We will be seeing you guys again in a few weeks, and we thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode. God bless everybody.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.